And welcome to show 11 of the UK MSDN Flash podcast. This show is recorded on the 6th of October in London with Steve Marks, who's a technical strategist working on Windows Azure over in the US. And we were hosting himself and David Chappell with a number of our systems integrators and ISVs in the UK. It does start a little bit slow. Bear with it. It picks up and there's lots of good information once you get past the first few minutes. We did have to, a little bit of problems with what was going to be public at PDC. But the end show is 30 minutes of interesting stuff, predominantly around storage. So we cover off things like entity group transactions, storage cloud library, queuing, blobs, shared access signatures, blob container access policies, communication between nodes, which we'll see at PDC, and also some of the login changes as well. Check the show notes at bit.ly/MSDN podcast for links to a number of posts by Steve on the various technologies we discussed. Hope you enjoy it. Oh, and this show is also known as That's Where I Left My Shoe. Thank you.
So I'm sitting here with Steve. Steve's a technical strategist in DPE.
Hi. My name is Steve Marks, and I'm a technical strategist on the Windows Azure product group.
Marvellous. And you're over here in the UK with David Chappell, and we've been doing some work with SIs, ISVs, and you're heading on somewhere tonight,
right from here. I'm flying to Munich, and we have an event there tomorrow, also with David Chappell. I'm just sort of following David around while he does his thing. So so today we're here in London. Tomorrow we'll be in Munich, and then on Thursday we'll be in Paris.
Marvelous. It went good today, and we were only halfway through the day, but we thought we'd grab a bit of time over lunch to have an informal chat, which we expect to chop 73% of it away, and the rest of it is what you folks are listening to right now. And we decided we'd have a chat about storage, which is where I've been spending time lately. And we thought it'd be fun to try and remember everything we added since we did the first release of the developer fabric.
Yeah, you'd think we would have prepared this in advance, but we didn't.
We didn't, So we'll bounce back and forth.
So our initial assertion, I think, going into this is that sometime before July is the last time that the developer SDK, the development storage, was 100% in sync with the storage that was out in the cloud. What we're trying to remember is all the things that
happened since.
So certainly, shared access signatures. I'm sort of working backwards.
Yeah,
you know, shared access signatures were one, which just lets you, you know, address a blob with sort of a signature in the URL, so that you don't have to do. You don't have to sign the headers and things like that. It's useful for like giving someone a link to something that will work for them, but without giving.
I'm going to jot these down so we can revisit them.
Please do, because otherwise we're going to forget all of them as we go.
So we had shared access signatures.
Shared access signatures. That's definitely one that came somewhat recently.
Entity group transactions was a long way back.
That's the one, right? That's the one that came before July. I think that was in May, and that's sort of the initial sort of transaction support. What came since then?
So we're not specifically around storage, but we obviously got the service APIs.
Yep.
For service management APIs.
Service management API. He said he wants to focus on storage, and then like we get a list of two, and then he says service management API. It's nothing to do with storage.
That's only because we're struggling with storage. We know there's more there, but
we're struggling to remember. Exactly. The service management APIs. We gave sort of a new upgrade option around the same time. Actually, the same day, I think we announced the service management APIs. We had
a sort of in place
upgrade. Exactly.
Did we do something to blobs between?
I'm sure we did.
We did, didn't we?
What did we do?
Was it to do with changing just parts of published blobs with putblob and stuff like that?
That's right. That's some of those changes that came out. Right, there was right around the same time as the entity group transactions. There was also some stuff around sort of uncommitted blocks in blobs. So you can upload your blob in chunks called blocks, and then you can sort of commit them together. And right around with entity group transactions, you could go query those uncommitted blocks and do things like that. Later, I believe, came also the ability to just change one block.
That's right.
That's the one that we were missing.
And everyone listening is remembering the other two that we forgot.
Right, exactly. Somewhere there's a comment thread that's, you know, how could these guys have forgotten the biggest feature that ever got
announced? How can we trust these guys ever again?
They don't even know what
the product that you're talking
about.
And of those things, probably entity group transactions caused the most interest in the folks we were working with in the UK, because we're looking for anything that would help around the world of transactions. And that give them some help, and then they all started doing some really strange stuff in tables to take advantage of entity group transactions. Have you seen similar?
I've seen a little bit of... I mean, the fundamental thing with these entity group transactions is that you have transaction support, but only as long as you're operating in the same partition of the same table, right? So that's the entity group. At the moment, that means same partition, same table. Which means that if you want to do things like cross-table, you might end up doing something strange, like putting those two tables actually in one table and putting a special field that says which table it actually is.
Yeah.
And one of the nice things about Windows Azure Tables is there's no schema, so you can have different entities have different sets of properties, or a more familiar way to say it would be, you know, different rows with different columns and different numbers of columns. So you can easily sort of do this, but it gets a little awkward to handle in code. So there are things coming in the future to sort of help address some of those, but I haven't seen the same sort of thing where people thought of all sorts of clever things.
Yeah.
I mean, they're smart, and they're very sort of clever things, but they're also awkward, and I think they just underscore that this support for transactions is pretty limited sort of transaction support, and people have to really understand that.
Because the classic example is that kind of customer order details all gets put into the same table, which allows you to do a transaction across your customer order and your order details. But then when you're using things like Azure.NET data services in front of that, and you're trying to do something reasonable with it when you're trying to hydrate some objects in .NET, then it all gets...
Exactly. Done. Right, because we have this interesting thing where Windows Azure Tables itself, no schema, doesn't care, everything can be different, makes no difference. Azure.NET data services, the client library in .NET, wants classes that have...
Yeah.
So, you know, one way you can deal with it is you can create a class that has sort of the union of all the properties. And so, you know, it has all the stuff for the orders and all the stuff for the order details. And you only read the ones that apply because you got this. And so a bunch are null. And that's sort of awkward. And then there's some other things you can do. You sort of hook into the client library in certain places and sort of on the fly decide which class you want to sort of you want to instantiate, you know, with this object. But all those things are a little bit tough. I think we're still seeing people sort out good solutions for that, and I expect to see libraries and things like that make some of those things easier. And then, as I said, we're looking at, you know, sort of what other things can we do in transactions that that maybe under the covers are much like this, but give you sort of a more natural way to look at it.
Are we working on making storage clients support some of that stuff in any time soon? You know, the idea of different schema in the same table, effectively different tables in the same table.
I don't believe so. I think that the storage
client... What is happening with storage client? Have we decided what to do with storage client?
I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
So we'll definitely chop that bit out.
So we're gonna chop that bit out. I don't think there's actually much I can say.
So I'll phrase it slightly differently. So when people are looking at working with storage in Windows Azure, they come across Storage Client, which is a sample, and they find it quite useful. It's a big sample. There's a lot of code in there. And a lot of people feedback with, this shouldn't be a sample. This should be an API. It should be a framework. Do you hear that one? Has that one been coming? Is that essentially UK folks saying that?
I do hear that. It's not just folks in the UK. People around the world give us that feedback. I think a lot of people are treating it as not a sample. You know, they're treating it as it's the library for doing this. We've put all sorts of scary language in there. You know, we've said, hey, it's a sample. In fact, it's in that samples zip file when you get the SDK. And we've said things like, this is not for production use and whatever. It's not because they're big issues that we think are going to break you if you use this or something. It's just a question of support and how much we're sort of supporting that. So the sample that's in the SDK is not supported by our team in any sort of major way. That being said, we haven't hit our launch yet.
Yeah,
things may change certainly.
I mean, in the UK, we've had quite a few companies just pick up that sample, slice it and dice it down to something that they want specifically, and then run with that. And I must admit, I tend to actually avoid the sample and tend to just go straight for some data services when I want to do something with it.
I've actually, on my blog, there's a version of the of that sample, the storage client sample, that supports entity group transactions, supports querying out of the minute. Some of these features that we've talked about didn't make it yet into that sample client library, but in on my blog, that's right, actually. If we looked on my blog, we would find all this stuff. But, and a lot of folks have been using that as sort of small modifications to the thing, and that's the purpose of sort of giving it out in a source code form, is that people can just do what they want in there. They can hack around in there. You like some class, but it's marked internal, well, just go change it, you know. And so I encourage people to do that, but some people are sort of reluctant. I mean, some people want it, a sort of official library that they can use that's supported by Microsoft, and we do hear that feedback.
Okay. So we haven't mentioned queues, and that's because I couldn't think of anything that had changed with queues. Has anything changed with queues?
I don't think anything has changed in queues.
No. I mean, it's quite a simple model, and I think it still is quite a simple model.
There's an NQ and a DQ.
NQ and DQ. How long you want to DQ
right,
for.
Right, and that's about it. So actually, I can't recall any big changes there.
Do you get many folks asking about how Windows Azure queues compares with Service Broker? Because I've seen a couple of folks in the UK start to build a whole quite lavish architecture around Windows Azure queues, only for you to then point them as .NET Service Broker and kind of go, that's over there, and you're building it from scratch.
I think, just to speak to just the Windows Azure queues, I mean, they are the simplest. Mm. I mean, they are, put a message in one side, it comes out the other side. Probably in the order you put it in, but maybe not. And we guarantee you'll get the message at least once. Yes. And so every once in a while, you might get it twice. Mostly because somebody timed out while they were processing it, and so it became mostly in sort of a wanted way.
Yeah, somebody took it off the queue, it went hidden, they timed out in some
way. It timed out, it appeared again, someone else grabbed it. But meanwhile, the first guy woke up and actually finished working on it.
Yeah.
Now you've done the work twice. And so we do, the design consideration around the queue is to be commutative and idempotent. I love the word idempotent.
I love new words.
Which just means you can deal with it being out of order and you can deal with doing the work more than once. And that's it. It's a very simple, just reliable queue. You know that messages will get delivered and you get some assurances around that. No fancy features. No prioritization, no grabbing the thing that's six messages back in the queue. Couple things you could sort of do to try to do, but nothing like that. And so people who are looking for sort of different features of a queuing system, who are used to, MSM queue or something else like that, that's sort of feature rich, that's not what the Windows Azure queues are. It's really, if you just think asynchronous message passing, that's the scenario it's for. So for most other things, you should look at these other.
Yeah. So we shouldn't expect to see new features in queues in BDC timeframe.
No, I don't think there will be anything new in queues. I mean, queues, they do what they do. There's some feature requests that we've gotten in the past that I'm not sure where they are, if they're on a roadmap or not. I don't think they're coming for PDC for sure, for our launch at PDC. But people have asked for some things, like being able to reset the visibility time. So I DQ the message, I'm getting close to the timeout. Can I just
take a little bit longer,
ping again and say, no, I'm using it longer. Messages expire after 7 days, but I've seen some people, myself included, using the queue as sort of a lease service. And so you create a queue, you put one message on it, and then you DQ, and whoever gets it, he has the lease, and it comes back. But then after 7 days, you have to replace the thing. And actually replacing it in a reliable, robust way, so there's only one message and whatever, is actually really hard. So something to have longer-lived messages or even something that looks more like lease service or a locking service. Those are things we hear. So some of that stuff queues will probably evolve, but they won't be. It won't be in the direction of very complicated sort of queuing scenarios. It won't be priority queues, and it won't be moving messages around in the queue or reaching back and grabbing one or putting something on the front of the queue. You know, it'll always just put things in the back, get things out the front. They're all the same priority. It comes at best effort, first in, first out order, and it's going to stay like that.
So that brings us back to the first one we remembered, which was blobs and shared access signatures. Then.
Yes.
So we originally just had public and private blobs.
Yes. Yep.
And then, and I can't remember when we did that, but at some point we added the shared access signatures.
It was pretty recently.
It was in August, I think. In the last 4 weeks, I'd say. But
was it really? I think it's back August, which is you know,
I was on
5 or 6 weeks
throughout August. So we have access policies now on the container, and
There are actually two things. Right, the feature is sort of these shared access signatures, and it is just construct a signature, put it in the URL. So instead of in a separate header and whatever, you put it in the URL. And there are a couple ways that you can do it. There's sort of the direct, you can just construct the signature, tack it onto a URL, give it to someone, they can use that to access the blob. And you specify permissions sort of there in that query string. There's another thing you can do, which is you can create a policy. So this is only at the container level, but on a container in blob storage, you can create a policy, give it some name, some identifier, set some rules, and then create a signature based on that. So now I can create a policy, I can create a signature, I can give it to you, you're happily reading that blob, you're doing all these things, next week I decide I hate you, I don't want you to be able to read that blob anymore, I can just go in and modify that policy, because there's a named policy and it's in my control, I can go edit it later and revoke permissions or add new permissions and change things, and so it gives sort of a layer of indirection. Instead of just giving you a direct signature that gets you straight to the blob, now I'm giving you a signature that's tied to this policy so that I'm in control of that policy and can do things. So it's a security best practice, I'd say, for using those policies where you might want to change permissions later, things like that. So I encourage people to do that. And for that reason, the one that doesn't use a policy, the one that's just sort of signing directly, is limited to a 60-minute time window.
Right.
So you actually can't hand out one of those that's good for more than an hour. And that's because they're unrevocable. If it lasted longer, I mean, the only mechanism
we have...
You can
write access for 60 minutes.
Exactly. So the stuff I've been playing with it and want to keep doing is services like YouSendIt where you're uploading files and giving it out. Shared access signature is a nice way to give somebody access to a blob for some period of time or something. So it's a nice way to do that. I've also seen people using it in places where, you might have a website and you have some images on there and you store the images in blob storage. This is great as long as it's a public, anonymous access website. Because then anyone shows up, you embed sort of the URL of the blob and they can just fetch it, you make it public. If you want to authenticate users and only let them see the blobs in that case, you have two options. One is you funnel everything through your web front end, and so you always serve the images through there. Or you can use these shared access signatures. So when you generate the page, you generate a URL that points to the blob and has a signature that's good for 5 minutes. You give that then, even if someone goes right-click properties, here's the URL, emails it to their friend, they can't see it after a few minutes. And so it quickly expires. TwitPic is one of my favorite examples of this. The pictures in Twitter, sort of embed these things. And they actually do that. When you go to the site, the image that gets displayed has some sort of expiration in the URL.
Embedded in the URL.
So if you try to just deep link to it, which I did once, I'm embarrassed to say, from my blog, and sort of linked to it, it disappeared. It went away after a little bit of time. So then I did what I actually meant to do all along, which was make a local copy of it. I got fooled by my editing software and had linked to it inadvertently. And they're using it for that purpose, and I think that's a good one. You can even do it with, videos, which is a big one, because you don't want to funnel all that through your web front end. Just have Silverlight or Media Player or something gone straight to blob storage with a special URL that's only good for a certain amount of time, and limit sort of the risk of people sharing it and, leeching your data access. So it's really good for that. Couple it with sort of the container-level access policy so that you can turn it on and off. you get a pretty good security story as well as a way to sort of hand off that heavy lifting straight to blob storage instead of your application.
So given we have a development fabric that's out of step, certainly in terms of storage with the actual mm-hmm. live cloud at the moment, do you find you increasingly develop straight to the cloud, at least for storage? So you might be building a local web app instance while you're working on the web code, but your storage, you just go straight out to the cloud.
I almost always go straight to the cloud. The only real reason not to, I think, I suppose there are two reasons. One is I'm on an airplane and I'm trying to write code, right? I love it. The airplane is now, that's the example of sort of where you're offline, because everywhere else in life there's wireless or something, right? But the airplane there isn't, except that, like last week I was on a flight and they had Wi-Fi. So we're going to have to find a new, for those of you listening, if you can think of a place where you just, there's no way you'll have internet access.
Inside my dining room, there's no internet access. The wall is far too big.
Okay, good. All right, so now we have one room on the planet for all these stories. So anyway, so one scenario is you're offline, it's nice to have that local storage. The other scenario where I think it's really worth using the local storage instead of just coding directly against the cloud is where the latency and the bandwidth is sort of a problem. And if I'm going directly against the cloud, I have big files or whatever that I'm pushing around. When my web app is also in the cloud, those things are really close and they're over a fast network and whatever. When I'm running locally and then I'm talking to the cloud, there's some latency there, and there's certainly, I'm limited by the bandwidth that I've got in my house or whatever for pushing those things around. So depending on the kind of application and the kind of testing that you're doing, it might be a really good idea to do it local. Of course, also, once we get our commercial launch next month, so very soon, you'll pay when you're using the cloud, and you'll pay for the bandwidth, so you'll pay 10 cents per gigabyte in and 15 cents per gigabyte out, and that may be significant. For the same class of applications, I would claim, where it's a good idea to do it locally because it's faster, you'll also not want to pay the bandwidth charges. The storage in there is cheap enough that is not a big deal. But I've found myself just tending to use the cloud storage. It's just then it all works. I've already done that bit, it's all going to work. Plus, as I'm loading my test data and stuff, now it's sort of in the permanent place where it's going to stay anyway. And I found it good.
There are other bits that catch you out as well, because with the local storage being ultimately sitting on top of SQL Express, you start hitting SQL Express limits on sizes of things, which don't exist, or at least they're not the same sort of limits when you put something wide into a individual column.
And there is work, not just to sort of catch up development storage to what's already been sort of released in the cloud. That's going to happen very soon. But there's also work sort of in the general area of making sure there's full fidelity between those two. And so, as you said, the technology underneath is pretty different when you're running locally as opposed to in the cloud today. And we're working on trying to get that stuff closer together so that there aren't any gotchas when you're running locally and you store a date and it's out of the range of what's, there are little things like that actually are quite troublesome when they come up. It's really unfortunate. So we're working on that stuff too to make it better. But I see nothing wrong with people just working directly against the cloud storage, particularly if they're about to go deploy the app anyway and they're loading up some test data or something. Do it in the cloud storage and then leave it there. Deploy the app and, test with that same data. It's sort of nice to be able to do that as long as you're not in your dining room where you don't have wireless access. Yeah.
Nearly solved it.
Not quite. Just that one room. The rest of the world's fine.
Or you can use my wireless outside the house. You just can't. Which is always a bit of a challenge. So we've mentioned PTC a couple of times, and that's around about 4 weeks off now.
Yes.
So we should expect something around the development fabric or the storage for being more in step around that time frame.
Going to sync everything back up. Get the SDK and the cloud sort of back together, and there are going to be some new features coming out as well that I won't tell anybody about because they're secret till then.
Top secret.
But
we'll be happy. So if you're sitting there at the moment, you're in Windows Azure developer, You're spending time on it. You get to PDC. There'll be a bunch of stuff you got to ask.
Nice. There's some
stuff.
You
have a smile on your face.
There's going to be some stuff that's very cool. There's some stuff that some stuff that has been. I guess one thing I can mention is that we've talked for a long time about sort of the communication between different nodes inside your application. And today there is none. It's just via the queue with this asynchronous style. And people have asked about things like, could I run a distributed cache or something like that? Where really, the whole point is I want rapid accesses, and I don't want to go through a queue to do the communication. Things like that. So can these things talk directly to each other? And that's going to be coming out. We've talked about that before, but I think it's nice to finally, to get your hands on it. And the logging stuff, which actually we didn't mention on our list.
It wasn't storage enough for us.
It wasn't storage enough, but there's changes coming in logging, which actually I just blogged about. Let's see, we're it's Tuesday today.
Tuesday the 6th
in London, and I believe Saturday or so was when I pushed out the blog post about
sense,
these changes.
So, I looked at your blog last week and it wasn't there.
It's
so
very, very recent. I'm actually really excited about the logging stuff. Logging is sort of, in some ways it's not a very sexy topic. Mm. Logging is just, logging. I don't know. It's not the sort of thing people get excited about when they think
it's
about
a
the platform.
It's a bit of security. In many people's minds.
Yeah, but. Yeah. It's just
a bit of a...
But we're doing cool stuff, I think, with logging, because we came out with our CTP last PDC. That's a lot of letters. With our technology preview last October in 2008. And there we had this logging API, which I love for just sort of how easy it is. Mm. You just write to the log, put whatever string you want there, it gets there. Later you can say, I want to see my logs, and you collect them all up, right? In a lot of ways, exactly what logging should be. It's very lightweight. It's very, you can do what you want with it. It doesn't sort of put you into some particular way of doing things. We're sort of expanding that, and we're changing a little bit of the technology that's under it to make it even more flexible and to do a few more things automatically. So, for example, one thing you might want to do is collect, performance counters. Like, what's my CPU usage? How much RAM is free? Things like that. You could do that with the login API as it stood at our first preview, because you could get the performance counter, you could write it to the log, and, but it's sort of on you. You've got to think to do that. And in the case of your web application, you may not have a convenient point to do that every 10 seconds or something. Now you have to spin up another process or have some worker thread, and then what if IIS resets it and it disappears? It was work, right? We're actually building a new logging system that just gets packaged up with your application, so it's sort of decoupled. You can in fact replace it with one of your own if you want. Well, I don't mind. And it runs all the time, and it goes according to the configuration settings you give, which you can change on the fly. So when it's time to debug something, you can ramp up sort of what you collect and thing. And it runs all the time, collects whatever you tell it to. Lots of different kinds of things it collects. I think performance counters are probably the most obvious example, but there are other things that you might want to collect, and it's sort of designed to meet those needs as well. Collects up what you want. It pushes it to structured storage, so instead of just sort of a bunch of XML files out of this, you get a table in Windows Azure Storage that has all the different performance counters, the log messages, whatever you're collecting. At whatever interval you specify, it gets pushed there. Now you can do things like query it and whatever. You could build a little desktop sidebar gadget that monitors the thing and tells you how things are doing. Pretty cool stuff.
Does any of that get surfaced in the portal in the short term?
No. In the short term, this sort of pushes to storage. I imagine approximately, a week after PDC, you'll see some handy tools for sort of, for monitoring and whatever. People have actually done this already without the convenience of this logging.
Right.
People have actually built things that sort of push directly to storage and do it on intervals and things like that. We're building something, and it's pretty pluggable, so you can replace it with some. It's all built on event tracing in Windows, and the performance counters and things like that. So you can actually build your own trace listener and just plop it in instead. And so if you don't want to push to storage, if you want to do something else with it, use the service bus to push it to your data center to store it in SQL, whatever you want. There's no reason you can't do that. And actually, that's one of the things I'm most excited about for it. It's a sort of an improved login system, lots of features that people have wanted, but it's also, it's yours to sort of decide if you want it, if you don't want it, if you want something different. If we release a new version and you don't like that one, just stick with the old one, because okay. It's part of your application. It's not built into the operating system. It's not built into the fabric in Windows Azure. It's your application. So it's under your control, and I think that's a big deal. It'll let people sort of do what they want, and it supports the more robust sort of monitoring things people want to do. Like, they want to apply some logic. They want to log a bunch of things, and then they want to apply some logic and say, if we're seeing this message and RAM is low and the CPU's been spiking, well, then that's an emergency and call this guy.
Once you find a developer who's into logging, they will be seriously into logging.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, they will have a whole bunch of utilities. They'll have ways of turning it on and off and capture lots and lots of
information. Exactly. And that's that we now finally have, I think, a logging system that appeals to that guy. I mean, I think, you know, particularly if you've already built something like this, you know, if you have something that really works well, is very flexible, lets you sort of change things on the fly, then I think you'll really appreciate the features that are here and sort of the flexibility. But logging it's actually really cool. I mean, once you get into it, I mean,
I'm convinced. I'm going to go leave this room.
And you're going to log a bunch of stuff. I do it in my personal life. Everywhere I go, I just write it down. I just, you know, I put in a big pile of paper, and if I ever look at it, you know.
A paper trail for life.
That's what logging is, right? Logging is largely messages that no one ever looks at, you know? And so, but when something goes wrong, I'll be able to go look and go, that's where I left my shoe, you know? So.
That could be the name of this podcast.
That's where I left my shoe. Yeah, okay, I love it.
That's good. So you're doing a session at PDC. Is that a lap around all the new features? Is that down a specific area?
I'm doing a couple sessions at PDC, and I think that only... Oh, and I may even have a guest appearance during the keynote.
Very nice.
That would be kind of cool, but that's to be decided.
Are you demoing through the keynote, which is true pressure?
That's the idea. I'm the demo monkey, as they call me. Perhaps that's all still being sorted out. But I'm doing two sessions at PDC. One of them is a secret.
Okay, another secret.
So I won't tell anybody. But I tell you that it exists. It's sort of a teaser.
Now
you have to come and you want to see it.
It'll appear in the agenda on the day.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. But I won't tell you anything else.
Best session of the week.
But the one that I think is already published out there is just sort of an. Internally, I've sort of been calling it Beyond Hello World, and that's not actually the title. I don't remember exactly what it is, but it's sort of an advanced, you know, developing sort of advanced applications. So not just the sort of the ones that are obvious and the ones that you see and the sort of samples you see and whatever. And it'll be taking advantage of some of the new features that are just around the corner, and will be there by PDC. And there we'll sort of go through some you know, still. Contrived samples that I came up with, but a little more real and a little more, you know, taking full advantage of the platform and doing some things you might not have realized were possible. So that one, that one I think is already
so that's another out excellent there. Session to go to.
People should come to that one. That's going to be excellent. And then there's the secret one, which is also excellent but also secret. So it's even better. So hopefully I'll see some of these some of our listeners there.
Excellent. So the last one I had, actually, is just too late. And I mean in terms of, do you have a favorite third-party tool that helps you work with Windows Azure or Windows Azure Storage? Anything you'd recommend? So, you know, people are sitting out there, you know, there's some various samples out there that help you play with storage and do some stuff, mm-hmm. helps you with testing. Have you got a favorite?
You're making me pick a favorite.
See, I have a favorite, so it's a tally weighted question.
What's your favorite?
Well, my favorite is... So I came across a little India-based ISV, and I will probably kill their name, but Cerebrata, C-E-R-E-B...
Yes.
R-A-T-E. So they've been working on a new tool for working with Azure Storage, and they've been kindly giving me virtually daily drops. And it just gets better and better. So all of the... shared access signatures, access policies, all that kind of stuff. That's all in there
too. I know about that tool. Yep.
Good table support, good blob support.
They've been very active. They've been sort of following up every change and sort of.
But I only discovered it 1 week ago, so I feel like what else have I missed? Was my thought.
Oh, and they're out there. I think now. I think they're the ones who just hit the public beta.
That's true. They went beta.
Right. They just sort of got out. So now all of you can go get your hands on it. They have been sort of handing things around, you know, sort of privately, but, you know, probably if you asked them, they would have given it to you. But now they're sort of just open for the public.
Blessing, they give me daily drops of it's a little WPF application. Mm-hmm. It was working great. It was just the odd little bug. And yeah, they went public beta end of last week.
Yeah, so I know that's one that I've heard a lot about. There are a few on CodePlex.
There are a few sort of just
floating around there. I've used one called Azure Explorer a little bit. I haven't looked at it in a while, so I don't know what changes have come in there. But it was sort of, you know, I just needed to take a look.
Yeah.
And for just what's in there and did that blob actually make it there? Whatever. Yes. I found it really nice. It was sort of a light tool and just did exactly it. I know there's some people building also web interfaces, mm-hmm. which I think is interesting. It's a tough security model because now I've got to hand over my secret account key, you know, to somebody else. And, so obviously you have to be a little bit careful about that and make sure you trust the folks you're giving that to. But some people have been building that. That's kind of appealing too because I think it's nice to just fire up the browser and just connect there.
In fact, that same ISV have an online SQL Server management tool, and the only reason I'm aware of that tool is because it actually works perfectly with SQL Azure, or at least perfectly enough for me. So whilst we have issues with SQL Server Management Studio with SQL Azure, they don't seem to have those issues. I guess because they've been playing in this space, they've just quickly changed their online tool, and hey presto, you can work with the schema of SQL Azure, so that's quite nice.
Cool.
So, thank you very much for spending some time with me.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Much appreciated. And we'll only have to delete a small portion.
That's what you tell everyone. For the listeners out there, we talked for 3 hours. And so whatever you hear, we deleted most of it.
Thanks very much, Steve.
Thanks.
Thank you.